The following program is a presentation of the Flypod New Media Network, www.theflypod.com.
Flypod.com. I'm Mark DeWitt. Welcome to Cover to Cover. Hi, welcome to Cover to Cover. I'm Mark DeWitt. Today we have international bestsellers in the house. They've got a brand new book titled G.I. Brides. It's the wartime girls who crossed the Atlantic for love. We have Duncan Barrett and Nuala Calvi. Welcome.
Thank you.
All right, now, it took you a while to get here because you had to come across the pond, huh?
Yeah. We did, yes. But we've been here a couple of times over the last few years. We spent 3 months in the United States in 2012 researching the book, traveling to pretty much every corner of the country. We did 13,000 miles in little Fiat 500 and crossed through 38 states. So we've seen quite a lot of America, I guess, over the last couple of years.
In the book G.I. Brides, this takes a look at basically four ladies from England. I mean, here during World War II, we see an influx of all kinds of American G.I.s in England. The Red Cross opens up these places where they can kind of relax, maybe have a drink or something. They look for maybe volunteers, Red Cross volunteers to help. Sometimes the girls fall in love with the G.I.s, eh?
Yeah, that's the story really of Sylvia O'Connor, one of the women in the book. She was a volunteer just collecting up the dishes, and she caught the eye of a man called Bob O'Connor from Baltimore. And when he told her that's where he was from, she'd never heard of Baltimore, so she had to get an atlas out of the local library and look it up. And to her, it looked like it was right next to New York, so she sort of went around telling everyone she was going to New York.
So tell me about some of the other girls that we look at in the book G.I. Brides.
Well, one of them, and the one that was the inspiration for the book, is Margaret, who is actually my own grandmother. And she was married to an American captain who she met at the US Army headquarters because she had a job there as a typist in the war. But I never knew him because she actually remarried and never really talked about this first marriage until her second husband died a few years ago. And then she really began opening up about this chapter in her life. And, you know, it was such an incredible story. I thought, I wonder if there are other women out there like her. And when Duncan and I started to look into it, we realised that there were 70,000 British GI brides from World War II. So we thought, you know, this is an amazing piece of history that deserves to be told.
So what did the English people think of that? I mean, here are all these Americans, and they kind of start taking the girls away from the British men.
There was a certain kind of hostility to the Americans when they came over to Britain. I mean, I think people appreciated that they were there to help win the war, but they had a bit of a reputation. They were known as overpaid, oversexed, and over here. And that was the expression that was always used of them. One of the women in our book, Ray, said that she was warned off the Americans by her brothers who, you know, they had this idea that they were not to be trusted, basically. When it came to actual marriages, though, if anything, it was the US Army that was trying to put the brakes on them. They made it incredibly difficult for the GIs to get married while they were overseas. If a couple wanted to get married, they would have to fill out up to 15 forms. They'd have to be interviewed extensively by the man's commanding officer and by an army chaplain. They'd have to provide character references. At one point, the Red Cross were being asked to go around to the women's families and try to sort of dig up dirt on them. And then when this came out in the press, they actually stepped down from that because they thought it wasn't, you know, good publicity for them. So really, the process of an English girl marrying an American GI was made as difficult as it could be.
Now, if I remember right, I think I was reading somewhere where your grandmother, she was married to this daughter, to her husband, and he passed away, and she married...
She remarried. She married an Englishman, but he didn't know when he proposed to her that she already had three children. And she thought when she said that, he would run a mile, but actually he said, oh, well, I really love you, and I want to be with you, so I'll adopt all three of them. So my mum grew up knowing him as her father and was kind of encouraged to let everyone else get that impression that he was the real dad. So I think that's why really my grandma encouraged us not to talk about it until after he was gone. So it was really a bit of a family secret for many, many years.
So who else do you have in the book?
Well, Ray's very interesting because Ray lives near Pittsburgh, and she was in the Women's Army in Britain when she met and fell in love with a GI. She was actually a welder helping to waterproof the tanks for D-Day. And then there's Sylvia, who was in the Red Cross Club and caught the eye of Bob from Baltimore. And then we have Lynn, who was from Southampton, which was the port that all the supplies came in for the Americans. She fell in love with an Italian-American called Ben Petrino and moved to California. And although her marriage was very happy, the challenge she faced was, like many women, a quite formidable mother-in-law who wasn't so keen on her son marrying a foreigner, and at one point actually turned around to Lynn's husband Ben and said, "It's her or me," and forced him to choose between his mother and his wife.
And that was Sylvia that married the man from Georgia, I guess. Is that correct?
It was my grandmother, Margaret, who married the man from Georgia.
Margaret, yeah. Now, you know, some of the ladies, they went on successfully. Some of them you kind of feel sorry for. I felt kind of sorry for Margaret.
Yeah, she had a really rough time. I mean, first of all, arriving in the Deep South when she knew nothing about it except what she'd seen on Gone with the Wind. And, you know, there wasn't much work down there. So then they moved up to Akron, Ohio, and he worked for Goodyear. But the main problem with him was that he was actually an alcoholic. And no matter how many times they tried to start again, you know, his problem followed them everywhere. So in the end, my grandmother decided enough was enough. And she took the three children and ran away from him and sailed back home to Britain. But he did try to follow her and win her back. But unfortunately, he turned up drunk, so didn't make the best of impressions.
You know, I guess if all she knew about the South was Gone with the Wind, she probably felt better because Atlanta wasn't burning anymore.
Well, that's certainly true. Yeah, she was actually living in a small town called Arlington, but I think she was quite shocked in particular by the racial segregation there. That's something that came up in a lot of our interviews with British women who went to the South. You know, she described how black people would have to step out of the way and into the gutter when she walked past, how her in-laws' children weren't allowed to be friends with the local black children. And she found these things quite shocking, I think. And there were still lynchings going on at the time that she was there. So, you know, for someone coming from England to that environment, it was quite a culture shock.
So writing GI Brides, Duncan, Nuala, I mean, here you are. How do you collaborate on this?
Well, we pretty much sort of take it in turn, chapter by chapter, and then we will read and edit each other's work. So by the end, we can't actually remember who wrote which chapter because it's kind of in both of our voices. But it's the second time that we've done this. We wrote a book together called The Sugar Girls before, which was about four women working in the East End of London in a sugar factory in the 1940s and 50s. So it's kind of a style that we've developed together now and we're quite comfortable with.
It's probably easier writing nonfiction this way than it would be writing a novel, I guess, because, you know, obviously we're constrained by what really happened. And we always plan our books out quite carefully beforehand because the way they're structured is they tell a handful of women's stories, but jumping back and forth between the different stories as we go forward through time. So there's a lot of work sort of trying to work out the best way to arrange them so that you get the overall picture of the war and the post-war years sort of going through the book as a spine and then the individual stories kind of hanging off that.
So how do you intertwine those? I mean, so they come out, you know, great. I mean, here we start, you know, with the war going on. In GI Brides, the war does come to an end, and it seems like that the stories just seem to just flow just like water.
Well, as Duncan was saying, we try to kind of tell the story of the war and post-war years through the book. So when we start off, we have all these girls, you know, having grown up in wartime. They're doing different things, raised in the army. Sylvia's in a Red Cross club. My grandmother was a typist. And Lynn had an office job. And we see the impact that the GIs arriving in 1942 onwards has on them and on their lives, which is representative of, you know, the impact they had on millions of young British women. And then we follow them through the end of the war, waiting for the war bride ships, because around sort of 1945, 46, these women were desperate to join their husbands. But at that time, both the American and British governments were refusing to take responsibility for it. And there were actually protests outside the American embassy see in Grosvenor Square, all these brides and their babies with placards saying, "We demand ships." And then we see them all finally when the War Brides Act is passed in December 45, a few months later, they start to sail off to America, and we follow them kind of through the late 40s up to the early 50s, really, to find out what happened next.
With the book G.I. Brides, of course, you've got the four women, one of the women, kind of based loosely on your grandmother. How about the other ladies? Did you have a chance to talk to individual people, or are these just from the mind?
No, these are all true stories. Our books are completely true stories. So Sylvia, Ray and Lynn are women that we've interviewed. And these are, it's basically a biography of them, really. But it's true that we write in quite a novelistic style. It's a sort of narrative nonfiction style to try and make them as readable as possible. But we always send what we've written to the women that it's about to check over it and check that they're happy with it and that we haven't made any mistakes along the way.
So what do you hear from the women?
About the book.
Yeah.
I think they've enjoyed it. I think Sylvia said to us, she never expected to be famous in her 80s, basically. Lynn was saying she actually gave a copy of the book to her granddaughter and she read it. And her granddaughter said to her, "I can't believe you went through all these things, Grandma. You never told me about it." And she said, "Well, it just never came up."
And I think that a lot of people that have gone to war, probably true all over the world, for the things that you've seen and done, sometimes either you don't want to relive it, or like with the case of the lady that gave the book to her granddaughter, it just doesn't come up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I think in Ray's case, because she had a difficult experience with her husband, he actually turned out to be a famous womanizer in her hometown. She just hadn't really wanted to broadcast the fact that it had gone so wrong, and she hadn't really told any of her family about it. I mean, they knew she'd been married before, but they didn't know what had happened. And it's only really with the book coming out that they've read it and understood what she went through, and they're very supportive of her. But it's really taken decades for some of these women to talk about their stories. And I think one of the reasons is that when they first came here, they were told, don't talk about the war, don't go over what happened in Britain, this is a fresh start for you, just try to fit in. And that's what they did. They didn't want to bring anyone down with tales of the Blitz and the bombing and how hard it had been back in Europe. They just wanted to kind of assimilate as much as possible.
Well, in the book, about in the middle of the book, there are pictures. Tell me about some of those pictures.
Well, we were lucky to have photos of the women as they were when they met their husbands and photos of their wedding days. So you can see some of the kind of wartime fashions, and you can see the men in uniform, which is nice because all the women that we interviewed told us that a large part of the appeal of the GIs was that compared to British soldiers, they had these very smart, very tight fitting uniforms. So I think it's great for readers to be able to see those. We actually have a website as well, gibrides.com, where there are lots more photos. So if you're interested in the topic, or if you're reading the book and you want to see more, there's lots of pictures up there, and also audio interviews with some of our war brides, so you can hear them talking in their own words.
Growing up, I always thought free love in the 60s was kind of a new thing, but not really a new thing, eh?
No, my grandma was having a whale of a time working at the U.S. Army headquarters, dating lots of different handsome American officers, but I think that perhaps she was fairly rare. I think a lot of the women we spoke to, they wouldn't dream of sleeping with men before marriage, and they might have a peck on the cheek at the end of the night, but from what they've told us, they were very well behaved. Whether that's true or not, I don't know.
Well, you guys, young authors, I don't know how young, but fairly young. I'd say 20s myself. That's just me, but the older I get, the younger people look. Why historical novels like this?
Well, I personally feel that when I'm reading a story and I know that it's real, it means so much more to me. When difficult things happen to the characters and those are real people, it's extremely inspiring to think that they got through those things and they found a way past the obstacles that were in their way. And I grew up reading fiction, but it's only sort of since I started getting interested in writing nonfiction that I've been reading more of it myself and really appreciating how incredible nonfiction can be. And I think that often people think nonfiction is stuffy history books or celebrity biographies, but actually there's quite a rich vein of nonfiction now that you know, it is about the storytelling, it is about gripping the reader, but it's just about telling you about real life or things that happen in history, but bringing it more to life, and that's what we try and do.
When you do that, how do you both work together? How do you collaborate? Do you have like a wall with a kind of a timeline on it so you know where you're at? I mean, how do you do that?
We usually start planning a book with thousands of index cards with color-coded for the different women that we're going to be writing about and all the different incidents that happened to them, along with when they happened. I mean, sometimes people tell us things and they actually can't remember, you know, was this that year or this year or whatever. So we have to kind of make decisions on those. And then we lay them all out on a very large table and start moving them around and trying to get some kind of a shape to it and trying to make sure that there's an interesting dramatic arc for each character throughout the book, but also that each chapter has a kind of satisfying shape to it as well. And when you're interweaving stories the way we are, you have to kind of be aware of, well, you know, if this thing's just happened to this person in this chapter, then in the next chapter, we don't want it to seem too similar or to clash in an awkward way. So there's a lot of kind of, you know, maneuvering things around to make sure that the book reads from cover to cover as a whole, as well as serving all those individual stories within it.
Why index cards? I mean, does it move from index card, well, from the mind index cards to the computer?
Yeah, we kind of, once you've got it all laid out on the table, then we go through and type it all up and we work from a you know, fairly lengthy document there as we write through the book. The index cards just mean you can move things around and you can see, you know, if we start off with a timeline with everything perfectly in order, then obviously we have to kind of group stories together to make a chapter before you go on to the next person's grouping. So the index cards allow us to just kind of shuffle things around here and there around the edges.
Sounds like the both of you like jigsaw puzzles.
It does feel like a very complex, mind-bending jigsaw puzzle, actually.
So with GI Brides, let's go back to the book that you had prior to this. Tell me a little more about that.
Well, it was similar in format in that it followed the stories of four young women and kind of the period of their lives from, I guess, their late teens to their early 20s and until they get married. And it was based in London's East End at a very famous sugar factory there called Tate and Lyle in the 40s and 50s. And it's really about, you know, that period of their lives before marriage and motherhood, where they were quite young and quite free, and although they were doing this quite difficult, hard, heavy factory work, a lot of them would say to us, you know, it was the time of our lives, because that was when they formed female friendships and they went out and went dancing. And even though those were tough times, you know, in the 40s and 50s, times of austerity, you know, they didn't have all that much money, but you know, they found their own ways of having fun. So it was really capturing that spirit of being young and female and having fun.
So take me back to the 1940s England East Side. Was it a well-to-do side? Was it more of a poor intermediate? How was it?
Well, the East End was the poorest area of Britain, of London, and it probably still is. And in the war, it had been terribly bombed during the Blitz, and it still had the scars of that. And the book kind of opens when the factory is still being bombed and the girls are having to rush to the air raid shelters and then rush straight back to the production line as soon as the all clear is sounded. And some of the girls in our book, you know, their parents didn't have enough money to feed them properly. They might be sharing, you know, five kids to a bed and wouldn't have proper shoes. And one of them, several members of her family died, you know, in infancy, and they didn't even have enough money for a proper burial. So, you know, these were really tough times. It was a tough place to grow up. But what really shines through is, you know, the incredible, unbreakable spirit of those people in the East End.
So tell me about London now. You both are from London, live there mm-hmm. right now.
Yeah.
We do, yeah.
Tell me about London. What do teenagers do in London?
No idea what teenagers do in London. You were very kind saying we were both in our 20s. I think you were being generous. But there's lots to do in London. I mean, we've been traveling around the United States for the last week or so. And as I say, we spent many months here a couple of years ago. We just come from Chicago, which we thought was a wonderful city we'd never been to before. But it sort of made us start thinking about London with fresh eyes, because we'd both grown up there and spent our whole lives there. And then coming away and seeing other cities and see what we like about them and what we don't like about them, it sort of makes you appreciate, I suppose, how much we do have right on our doorstep at home that maybe we don't make the most of.
But also, it kind of reminds you how much history that there is in London. I mean, you know, we've been learning a lot about the history here, but it only goes back a few hundred years. And, you know, so that's something which, you know, especially as a writer of history, it's a wonderful city to have grown up in and to be writing in London.
I mean, we write about the Second World War quite a lot, and, you know, you can't go anywhere in London without really being aware of that. The street that we live on, the side that we live on is all these sort of Victorian cottages, and on the other side there's a little bit of wall from what was obviously the same kind of building at one end, and then the rest of it is entirely modern buildings because, you know, that side of the street was just flattened in the Blitz.
That'd be something, I guess, to realize, I guess. I mean, really, we haven't had a war here since maybe Mexico or England, I guess. Eh?
Mm.
Maybe the Americans don't really know how lucky they are.
I think that's true. I mean, I think one thing that some of the English women felt coming over here was that, especially if they'd suffered a lot, I mean, Ray had been working in the army, in the women's army in Britain. Her family had been bombed out of their houses many times. And she said she found it very hard coming over. They threw this big party for her, a Welcome to America party, and there was just huge quantities of food that she wasn't used to because they'd been living under rationing. And although she knew that they were being generous and trying to be kind, she just felt, these people don't understand me at all. They don't know what I've been through. They don't know what my country's been through. Everything seems fine for them. You know, they've had a good experience and they seem happy. And she kind of felt there was a real disconnect there with what her experiences had been in the war.
So who was your favorite character to both of you in the book? Who did you enjoy writing about the most?
Well, obviously, writing about my grandma was particularly special for me, but in a way, it was actually the hardest one to write. She was no longer around by the time I was writing it, but I did lots of interviews with her in the last months of her life, in fact, and you know, because I guess she's familiar with me, she could be quite tetchy and, you know, asking her about difficult things. Sometimes she'd be a bit prickly with me and say, why are you asking me that? You know, so it was quite difficult, actually. And then when I was writing it, some of the things that happened to her were very hard, and it was upsetting because, you know, not only did I know this was a real person that I was writing about, but that these things had happened to my own grandmother, and some of them were very upsetting. So for me, it was quite an emotional experience, really.
Definitely. The other three women, we were really lucky in the women that we found. They were all really lovely and all very fascinating stories, and also just all very admirable women, I think. And we enjoyed writing their stories in different ways. Lynn's story is probably the most romantic in the book, you know, and she remained happily married to her husband all of his life. Sylvia's, there was quite a lot of comedy in there. She described herself as a Calamity Jane. Things always seemed to be going wrong for her. Even on her wedding day, she actually got married in America because her husband, her fiancé had been sent back before they could get married in England. And her mother had made a wedding dress for her in England for her to wear, but obviously hadn't counted on the weather in Baltimore being much hotter. And she was literally passing out at her wedding, and they were having to bring around the smelling salts. Ray was someone who also faced a lot of adversity in America, but was just an incredibly strong-willed person. I mean, she actually ended up getting divorced from her husband, and he tried to deport her from the United States because he was so angry. And that really made her all the more determined to stay. And she became an American citizen, and she remarried, and she's lived here all her life. And just that sort of strength of will was quite amazing to us.
Tell me the difference a little bit with the writers from the UK as opposed to American writers.
I guess one thing, I mean, it's not so much about writers, but just in the kind of area that we write about the Second World War, we've been very struck by the fact that over here there's this idea of the greatest generation, and that the men and women who lived through that period of history, and particularly the veterans from the war, are really respected and kind of admired in a way that I don't think is really the same in Britain. I mean, we do have commemorative services of remembrance and that sort of thing, but really, in Britain, I think a lot of older people are just kind of put away and ignored, and no one is necessarily as interested in their stories. So that's one reason that what we do is like drawing out, you know, the history of ordinary people, basically, through finding out what their personal experiences were. And sometimes it's quite sad. Sometimes we'll spend days interviewing someone and finding out these incredible things that they did when they were younger, and their own children and grandchildren have expressed no interest. You know, it doesn't mean anything to them. They don't really want to know what their relatives went through.
So what's up next for Duncan and Nuala?
Well, we're currently working on our third book, which it's another narrative nonfiction book. And this time it's going to follow the stories of three women who are in the armed forces in the Second World War. And the working title is Girls in Uniform.
So we'll go back to the 1940s again.
Yeah. Yep. That's our home away from home.
Yeah, you know, that seems a little different. I mean, here you have to get back to that era. You have to know basically what you can put in a book, what you can't. I mean, somebody gets in trouble, there's no cell phones anymore.
That's certainly true. Yeah, yeah.
All right, so if I wanted more information, I know that you have a website, gibrides.com.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
That's right. Any other websites?
Well, there's a website for our previous book, actually, www.sugargirls.com. So you can, and similarly, there's photographs, there's audio clips. That book, I don't think was ever published in America, but it is available here through, because our publisher is HarperCollins and they're a transatlantic publisher. Certainly you can order, you know, their English titles, and I think they print them and send them out over here. So Sugar Girls is the first one and G.I. Bride's the second.
G.I. Bride's sounds like it's taking off.
Yeah, it was a bestseller in England, in Britain, last year, and it's just come out here just a week ago, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So once people read G.I. Brides, they want more from Duncan and Nuala. I mean, I'm sure they might look at your first book, huh?
Maybe. That would be great, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, I think if you like this book, you probably will like Sugar Girls too, because it's quite similar, following the stories of four young women. And, you know, again, we try to focus on women that were quite inspirational and overcame challenges as well. And I think it's a good read.
I'd say anyone here who has been watching Call the Midwife as well, the world of the Sugar Girls will be somewhat familiar, because it's basically the same kind of time period and not exactly the same area, but very near to the same area in London. So that's really the sort of world that the Sugar Girls is coming out of.
Well, G.I. Brides, I mean, we go back to the 1940s, back to World War II, Britain. We find all these ladies here, and the guys are just clamoring for them. A lot get married, a lot come back, and you're going to follow four ladies from England to the United States and see what their lives are like. It's sure a page turner. Duncan, Nuala, thanks a lot.
Thanks for having us.
You've been listening to Cover to Cover. I've been your host, Mark DeWitt, along with Duncan Barrett and Nuala Calvi, author of their brand new books, G.I. Brides.
To access this or other audio programming, visit our website, theflypod.com.